The Zone with Jason Anderson.
This is a guy through the first three quarters of the game had a quarterback rating of... Well, now I lost that.
Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you. We head up until 2 o'clock. Victory Monday for the Chiefs, getting the win 41-31 over the Bucks. We are hanging out at Blue Hills Country Club, forthekids.org, F-O-R-E, thekids.org. Excuse me, forthekidskc.org, F-O-R-E, thekidskc.org is the website you can go to and check out and see how you can help, give back, donate, and the millions and millions of dollars that they have given to Children's Mercy in developing the anxiety and depression clinic there at Children's Mercy to try to eliminate teen suicide, a very serious subject, an unthinkable subject, and they are doing what they can to try to eliminate that from any families to have to go through that. So we are hanging out here in support of that as well, F-O-R-E, thekidskc.org. We've also been talking about this Chiefs victory last night and sitting 3-1 on the season are the Chiefs. Joining us now, our NFL insider from ESPN to break down the Chiefs and the Bucks big win for KC. It is Field Yates joining us here in the Zone. Field, what's up, man? How are you, sir?
Well, first of all, that was more like it, right? I mean, last night, that was yes. The team that we were accustomed to seeing. Very Chiefs-like performance last night. I know that the score made you think maybe it was a fairly close game, but if it's possible that a 10-point victory is not reflective of a dominant effort, I think last night was a testimony to it.
We've talked a lot about Patrick Mahomes in the offense, but you said something there that sparked something in my mind. Is it possible that giving up 31 points is not indicative of maybe a defensive performance?
I don't think it was because I understand, to be honest with you, like, I don't know if a game that was, as I suppose, closely contested as 41-31 suggests could ever be this way, but it felt to me like that game was over about 90 seconds into the actual game because the fumbled opening kickoff turned into a quick strike touchdown to Travis Kelce. It took the life out of the Bucks, and I know that they ended up battling back a little bit in the second half, but I thought a pretty solid defensive effort from the Chiefs on the whole, even with 31 points allowed. I mean, you're facing off against Tom Brady, and he actually had his receivers largely healthy for the first time all season. I don't think yesterday was a performance the Chiefs defense should feel bad about, even if 31 points feels like a lot. I think that was actually a relatively solid effort, all things considered.
Yeah, I had pointed out the stat that our friend Craig Stout from KC Sports Network tweeted out last night that the Chiefs defense gave up a field goal in the game when the Bucks were within three scores. That was it. When the game was within three scores, they gave up a field goal. I mean, that's kind of indicative of how that game went. And I wonder, Field, like, do you think Spags has the same play calls, game plan the rest of the game or for the bulk of the game as he did last night if it was more of a back-and-forth offensive struggle that the Chiefs weren't doing what they could offensively and it wasn't about, hey, how do we continue to protect this multi-score lead? And that is, well, we can't give up big plays. If they have to drive the length of the field and score, then that's fine. But our offense is going to come out here and score, and they're not going to have enough possessions left as long as we don't give up big plays. I don't know if there was an adjustment like that or last night's game plan would have been the exact same. But I wonder how much Steve Spagnuolo may have adjusted things and said, I see how this game is going, and we're not giving up big plays to Mike Evans and Godwin and whoever else. We're going to make them drive.
It's a great point. And we, all of us, even coaches themselves, are guilty of this from time to time, where we fall back on per-game averages because they are useful in a lot of ways, right? I mean, over the course of the season, if you're putting up 30 points per game, it suggests you're a very good offense. If you're only allowing 10 points per game, it suggests that you're a very good defense. But there are situations where you have to dig a little bit deeper beyond the box score, and I think that what you're describing right now is exactly it, is within the course of the game last night, I don't think the Chiefs defense did a whole lot that is, you know, unexcusable or inexplicable, right? Like, circumstantially, they had a certain way in which they were able to play, and it felt like they played that at a high level. So there are probably other days where you can lament defensive issues. but they haven't been the past 2 Mondays. Is I thought the Chiefs gave basically everything they could last Sunday, even in a loss against Indianapolis. And then last night, I thought that it was hearty. It was a solid defensive effort, even on a night when Tom Brady has his best night of the year statistically and looks a little bit more like Tom Brady.
Yeah, and you know what, the per-game averages and sort of game flow dictate some of these things as well, that if you look at the per-game averages with the Chiefs' run defense, last night is going to do a lot to boost how good the Chiefs' defense is.
They came up three rushing yards. I think they're at like 65. Yeah, I think the Chiefs are now up to 65 yards per game allowed, which coming into last night, I can do some math here. I believe, if I have this correct, it was at like 90 yards per game or 95 yards per game allowed going into last night. It was down to 65 now because of what you said, whatever it was, three yards or 6 yards total, which I can't imagine there'd be too many games in NFL history where a team runs for just 6 yards, even in this pass-happy league that we play in right now.
Yeah, last night our friend Kent said, hey, you, yes, you reading this tweet, you had more rushing yards than Leonard Fournette did tonight. I'm like, oh, that's right.
Isn't it just amazing? You know, hey, how much fantasy work I do at ESPN.
I know, yeah.
And there are days in which you think to yourself, how in the hell am I supposed to size any of this stuff up? How are you supposed to predict this stuff, right? Who could predict that I would have had more rushing yards than Leonard Fournette last night? To your point, like, this is what makes this stuff just wonky as all get out. Now, it's still fun, and we love it, and we'll never get rid of it. But I tell you what, man, I'm not trying to take myself off the hook, but there are some days where I say to myself, that wasn't a bad call by me. That was just illogical things taking place on a football field.
Well, I mean, I'm going to end up losing my fantasy week this week, which people really care about. They want to hear it. And it's because I benched Clyde Edwards-Helaire for Khalil Herbert. No. And it was I have Javonte Williams. I like the matchup with the Raiders and Edwards-Helaire with Pacheco and McKinnon. And, you know, the Bucs are a good run defense. I'm like, the matchup isn't great. And I think Herbert has a great matchup. This is an opportunity for me to play him. I'm going to play him here with Williams. And then, of course, you know, Williams does what happened with him, which looks like it could be pretty bad. Herbert was okay, and then Clyde Edwards-Helaire goes and has 90 yards and 2 touchdowns. I'm like, well, you know what? But I don't feel dumb for making the decision. It's just fantasy football. Sometimes it works out like that.
100%. I'm just here to tell you, that's exactly how things work out on occasion. There's nothing you could have done differently. As a matter of fact, your process was relatively sound right there, right? I mean, Clyde Edwards-Helaire right now is breaking fantasy football models. He continues to score touchdowns at an astronomical rate. By the way, as we know, during his career up to this point, one of the issues was he seemingly never scored touchdowns. The Chiefs' rushing attack is better this year than it has been in the past couple of years. All this stuff makes no sense. CEH keeps, as I said, agonizing fantasy analysts left and right, but if you're starting him, then you continue to be very happy. And I think at this point, even though the numbers will eventually tail off, you would think, just because, like, it's almost like the laws of regression gravity tell us that things are going to eventually level off. I think what CEH has become is one of those players, and this is a lot of fantasy football in my opinion. I know people who are out there right now that know numbers would say, hold on, you got to be a bit more process-driven. And 95% of what I do is process-driven in fantasy football. But there are occasions where guys are doing things that just seem like there's no way they can keep up, and they continue to keep up. So you just keep playing that player. And if he proves you wrong, well, that's how the cookie crumbles sometimes. But I, at this point, would rather to continue playing CEH and hope that somehow he keeps finding the end zone than bench CEH and wait for the game in which he only has 7 carries for 30 yards with no catches and get you just 3 fantasy points. Like, just keep playing him. Let the good times roll right now.
Yep, I'm going to. Field Yates is our guest from ESPN NFL Insider. So one of the things that I think is the takeaway from this game, and it goes along with last week's game against the Colts, I started off the show and talking about all the things that the Chiefs did and the performance and all of that stuff, but then got into the, I'm hoping last night, especially given last week's conversation, Field, can maybe put to rest the week-by-week one-game referendum on the Chiefs' offense with and without Tyreek Hill of the Cardinals. They're fine. They're fine. See, this is what they imagined. Colts, see, you don't have Tyreek Hill. This Chiefs' offense is going to struggle. Bucks, well, you know what? They didn't need Tyreek Hill because this offense, they're just going to spread it around. I just don't want to go through 17 weeks of each individual game being about whether or not the Chiefs' offense can survive and if the – the concept of building the offense this way was right or wrong each and every game. I started off today's show, or one of the things I talked about in today's open was, I'm hoping after last night we can sort of just move on and talk about this Chiefs offense and what it is right now, regardless of who is or is not playing for the Chiefs.
Yeah, the problem with football is that when you're making those kind of arguments, is that they end up being the kind of arguments that you can win or lose any given Sunday. What that is, let's fast forward to the playoffs, right? And let's just say that the Chiefs, in the third round of the playoffs, the conference championship, they lose a game to the Bills in which the Chiefs wide receivers combine for 112 receiving yards and Stephon Diggs has 145 on his own, right? Well, then you know what the takeaway is going to be the next day. Regardless of how good the coverage was or was not on Stephon Diggs, regardless of how good the protection of Patrick Mahomes was or was not on that day, it's going to be all about the fact that Marquez Valdes-Scantling and Juju Smith-Schuster and, you know, Mecole Hardman combined for X number of yards. Hold on now. If you play a seven-game series, my guess is the Chiefs' wide receiving core is not going to be the issue for them if they lose four out of those seven games, right? But conversely, if the Chiefs win the Super Bowl and Juju Smith-Schuster gets hot and has 20 catches in the postseason, you can say, hey, you can do it, right? You can do strength in numbers over, you know, one star in Tyreek Hill and a bunch of complementary pieces. It works that way as well. So football is a beautiful game that we love to analyze back and forth, but I think we even recognize that some of these arguments are difficult to make simply based off sample size. Like, it's just hard to size things up when you've got 17 opportunities to examine them.
Field Yates is our guest from ESPN NFL Insider. The Chiefs are playing the Raiders this week on Monday night, and so it's another in-division game like they had against the Chargers a couple of weeks ago. The last few weeks have been really interesting with the other teams in the West, with the Raiders, the Broncos, and the Chargers. The Broncos have found ways to win. The Raiders have found ways to lose. And then yesterday, they beat the Broncos. The Chargers made it a little more interesting against the Texans. But what's sort of interesting to me, and Travis Kelce talked about after the Colts game, saying, like, you know, just it's about how you're playing at the end of the year. You got to be playing good football. We got to get back to playing good football. And then, you know, health and attrition throughout the year, like, all of those things matter. And I'm looking at the AFC West now field, and I'm going, you know, Denver already lost Tim Patrick. It looks like they've lost Javonte Williams for the season. Is he out for the season? Okay, I hadn't seen the latest with that one.
Tore his ACL, yep.
Randy Gregory is also having an MRI, and they're looking at him as well. The Chargers with Bosa that's going to be out for a couple of months, and Allen's been injured, and Slater's gone for the year, and they've got issues with Jackson's foot and Lindsley, and it's just how like the attrition can change so much. And I don't know what the view is moving forward of the AFC West, but it's not to then dismiss the other three opponents because they have good players, but the road looks a little bit easier for the Chiefs. Health certainly matters, but those are significant players that are dropping from, you know, these teams that, you know, are playoff caliber teams, or even, you know, potentially division winning teams that you just can't suffer too many of those, or it just ends your season and chances of doing that. That's what it feels like with two of the other three teams.
Yeah, and it certainly feels like the injuries have most dramatically hit the Chargers, just because we don't know the status for sure on Randy Gregory. We'll see. It doesn't sound great for Denver, but still, until we have clarity there, a little bit different than losing both Rashawn Slater for the entire year and Joey Bosa for 8 to 10 weeks. They've already been without Keenan Allen. Justin Herbert's dealing with a rib injury, which seemed to be in a lot better shape yesterday. He played much better against the Texans, even in a game that got weirdly close in the second half. But here's what I would say, is that through four games, each team has now played four games, of course. Mm-hmm. There's only one team that's put it together wire to wire on multiple occasions where you've said to yourself, all right, like, their best is A, better than almost every other team's best, and B, and this is more important, something that we can expect to actually happen. The Broncos are 2-2. They won one game 11-10 against the San Francisco 49ers last Sunday night, right? Like, nothing about what Denver has done so far has come easy. And wasn't the formula supposed to be that all they were missing was the key to unlock everything, and they finally found the key? In this case, they traded for it in Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson's a good player, there's no doubt about it. But has anybody sat there and watched Russ this season and thought to themselves, all right, we're talking about a Mahomes, an Allen, a Lamar? No, the answer is they haven't. And maybe that'll happen in due time. But Russell Wilson made it seem like the issue was Seattle. And it seemed like the offensive coaching staff and Pete Carroll were holding him back. And he goes to Denver and everything's hunky-dory. And I read 9 profiles about Nathaniel Hackett this offseason and how everything's going to be just fine. They're going to explode. A lot of season left. But I've yet to see that explosion. And maybe I'm missing something. But they better get going in a hurry because it's unacceptable and to play this kind of offense so far. And the schedule, it's not going to be easy. I know the AFC may not look quite as dominant as we thought it would coming into the season, but it's also not going to be any cake or too many cakewalk games for the Broncos. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And as you said, Javonte Williams is out for the year, and that's a guy who's, you know, certainly a pretty darn good player, and now it's going to be Melvin Gordon and Boone. Last one for you, Field Yates is our guest. What do you think of the Raiders? They win their first game, but, you know, a ball bounces a different way a few times. They, you know, in theory could be 4-0 right now. So this Raiders team that's had some close losses and they beat the Broncos, how good are they? And they at least tried and started to get their season back on track yesterday.
Yeah, and, you know, last year the Raiders won an absurd amount of really close games.
That's right. Yeah.
I believe if you go back and look at the data, they were the best team in the second half of the season, maybe the entire season, in that close game echelon, you know, whatever that, however you want to define. I know in the NBA we define clutch time, and I think like plus or minus 5 points under 5 minutes to go. Right? Like in the NFL, one score games is probably the same metric, and the Raiders were super lucky. That's one of those things that no matter how good you are, like luck just suggests it's going to even out over time, right? The Bills were on the opposite end of the spectrum. I think we all agree the Bills are an excellent football team. They got back on track yesterday with a one score win for the first time in a long time. And I think the Raiders are fine. They're solid, but I mean, an offense that was supposed to be dominant has not been there as well. So two offenses that we thought would be great, maybe challenge Kansas City for the best in the division, certainly don't look anything like that through the first 4 weeks of the season. But the Raiders, you know, I don't know if that hole was too big at 0-3 to dig themselves out of, but I also know that they're too talented to expect them to just roll over and quit because there is a lot of blue chip talent on both sides of the ball.
Visiting with Field Yates from ESPN. It's a week away, and it's only a Monday, but do you have a score in mind if you're throwing a dart for Chiefs and Raiders next Monday night?
Actually,
you know what? You know what, Field?
You know what? You want to do it next Monday?
I'll ask you next Monday. How about that? That'll be a more that'll be a better prediction next Monday. So I'll ask you next Monday that question, all right?
Awesome. Looking forward to it already.
Field, you're the man. Appreciate it, sir. Absolutely. There's Field Yates from ESPN, our NFL insider. Yeah, it's a Monday night game. We talk to Field on Mondays. I'll just ask him next week. Yeah. Field, let's get it right now and then again on Monday. So, yeah, that Chiefs-Raiders game, I felt like they were going to beat the Broncos, and they end up doing that, but we'll find out. Yeah, they won so many close games last year, and that was kind of the conversation as to why, you know, people thought they would take a step back even after bringing in more talent. That they would not be as good as they were a year ago, at least in wins, is because those close games start to even out. You win a bunch of close games, you probably lose a bunch of close games. And they started out this year with 3 straight losses by one score after last year finishing the season at like 6-1 or something in one score games, especially down the stretch when they had to win all of those games. They ended up doing that. They were also 3-1 against backup quarterbacks last year too. So those things start to even out. The Chiefs and Raiders coming up. But as far as the AFC West is concerned, that news that was there that came out, I guess, just before we talked to Field, but Javonte Williams is out for the year, and it's not just a knee injury, Josh. It looks like it's a significant knee injury for Javonte Williams that may be a longer road back rather than just your – he tore his ACL. That sucks. Come September next year, he's going to be there as a starting running back for the Broncos.
Yeah, it's a torn ACL, torn LCL, and a posterior lateral corner. according to Ian Rapoport, posterior lateral corner. I don't know what that one is. I know torn ACL, torn MCL, not good. So yeah, it could be a while for Javonte Williams. A really major loss for the Broncos, yeah. as arguably, I don't know, Jerry Jeudy probably has his case. Their pass catchers are pretty good, but one of their legitimate weapons for an offense that has had an issue being high octane enough, and now it's all Melvin Gordon, who keeps fumbling in big situations. And Javonte Williams is just a legit fun, exciting young player, and any sort of injury that goes two or three lines deep into a knee is just devastating.
And also, it was yesterday was the game that people had thought, okay, are they going to start to give more of the lion's share to Javonte Williams? It's not going to be this 50-50 split. Yep. And they were doing that in the game. They had shown that, okay, this is going to be the starting to shift to less Melvin Gordon, more Javonte Williams, and that's the game in which he tears his ACL. And there's a reason they were going more towards him. It's not that they were saying, Javonte and Melvin Gordon, we don't know, six in one hand, half dozen in the other. We're fine with whoever. No, it had been one of those, we want to keep him fresh all year, yada, yada, yada. Let's draft Javonte Williams so we can have a running back by committee with he and Melvin Gordon. But he's the better running back, and Melvin Gordon fumbles, and they didn't go with Melvin Gordon even when Javonte Williams went down. They went with Boone. I can't remember his first name.
Aaron, Daniel.
They went with Daniel Boone in that game, and I think that's pretty indicative of Nathaniel Hackett and what they think of Melvin Gordon, in that game against the Raiders, in which they were coming back and they were making that a game and they had a chance to win. Melvin Gordon was standing on the sideline holding his helmet, and Javonte Williams was back in the locker room having his knee checked out, and a guy that people didn't know is out there playing for the Broncos.
American Pioneer Daniel Boone?
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. I said Aaron, but we were doing a bit. Beard,
okay.
So we don't know the.
I didn't know
the real Boone's last
name. That bit, and I thought he was actually saying that. So I was like, really?
No, Daniel Boone is a.
Oh, it's Brett Boone.
See, okay. we have lots of.
Sorry, Bob.
We have lots of options. Is there any other Boone? Can we make this any other? I don't know, Beards. You find me another famous Boone. In the meantime,
Pickens.
Can I interest you?
It's a Boone Pickens.
That's right, yeah.
from the grave.
I'd like to offer you a Melvin Gordon stat here from Adam Schefter. Melvin Gordon just fumbled again? He has fumbled five times in his past 44 carries over five games. But that's not even the real bold part of this tweet. Sunday marked the third time a Gordon fumble has been returned for a touchdown in Denver's past 12 games.
Wow.
Now, one of those, we remember quite well, the combination of Nick Bolton and Melvin Ingram, who I almost called Melvin Gordon just then, even. That was a fumble house call. It's happened two more times over these last 12 games, and then five fumbles in 44 carries. For not a rookie like pass catcher gadget guy by any means, veteran who's forgotten how to hold on to the football. Very strange, and a very big loss for Denver.
Mike Boone, this is his sixth year in the NFL. Could have surprised. I mean, I would have lost that.
Mike Boone. I feel like I've heard that name before. Maybe yesterday.
Yeah. As of yesterday, when Javonte Williams went down, and I was watching the Broncos and Raiders game, Mike Boone. This is his sixth year in the NFL. Played three with Minnesota. This is actually his third year with the Broncos. So there you go. Also, looking here, noticing that he has literally never fumbled in his career yet. So maybe that's why they went with him over Melvin Gordon. Is they're saying, you know what, running backs can be interchangeable. Don't drop the ball, Melvin. Oh, sorry, I dropped the ball. Okay, have a seat, sir. So it might be more Mike Boone than Melvin Gordon. But also, Randy Gregory, they're still looking at – I haven't seen any news on him. And he had one of those – he was coming around the edge, his right leg planted, and he immediately jumped up and held his knee and then went down. That was the last we saw. And then he went to the locker room. He had an MRI today as well. I haven't seen anything on Randy Gregory. If the Broncos lose Javonte Williams and Randy Gregory in the same game that they lose to the Raiders – that's as devastating of a day as you get in the National Football League, and kind of like when, you know, Bosa and Slater leave for the Chargers in the same game that we saw, last Sunday. So, boy, attrition in the AFC West is starting to take over.
Very much so. And if they do have to rely on Daniel Boone, I just don't know if head coach Davy Crockett's going to be able to do anything about that.
Andy Reid next.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
Not much of a break yesterday, Herbie. Unless you're counting lunch. I had lunch. That was good, right?
Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you. We got Learn Funniest Best coming up in the 1 o'clock hour. Let's hear from Andy Reid as meeting with the media today. They will be off from media press conferences tomorrow and Wednesday, and then they'll pick it back up on Thursday as a different week this week because they got Monday Night Football. But here is Andy Reid opening up his Zoom press conference after beating Tampa last night.
All right, so I don't have any injuries, not that we had a bunch of them anyways, but to give you, the guys are just starting to come in. We didn't get back here until late, like I'm sure you guys did. So, listen, I felt the same way as I did last night. I thought all three phases contributed to the win. It was, it was a good game for that. And normally if you can get all three going, then you're going to have some success. Like I said yesterday, I mean, that they or last night, they it's a tough state in the of affairs in the state of Florida right now. I mean, people are scrambling not only for their lives, but for just getting their homes right. So there's a lot of distractions that were taking place for Todd and his football team, but I was proud of our guys going in and taking care of business. I thought that was important, and the guys did that. I thought, between EB and Spags and Dave Tobe, they had great plans set up, and everybody, executed the best of their ability. There's still plenty that we can learn from this thing. So, but without the players, have a couple of days off because we're playing Monday night, and then they'll get back in here and start grinding for the Raiders, who had a big win also. So, we'll have our work cut out as we go forward. Anyways, with that, time's yours.
Let's go first to Herbie Teope. Go ahead, Herbie.
Some in-house matters. Blake Bell is eligible to come off of injured reserve this week. What are you hoping to see out of him, and how close is he to returning to the active roster?
Yeah, I'll get with Rick here later and just see where we're at with that, Herbie. The guys, like I said, the guys are just kind of working their way in here right now. So, and then Brett Veach will be involved with that too. Just strategically how we do that and what we do there.
That can get off IR, and they might be getting some help back soon with the defense as well. And so hopefully that is the case. Hopefully the IR stint was as long as it needed to be for a guy like Trent McDuffie. Things like that, and then as he'll get ready for the Bills, next week? So it'd be the Bills after the Raiders. So one more game for McDuffie, get a little help back there, get by the Raiders, and then start to get a little bit healthier. Knock on wood, continue to have the health that unlike some of the teams we've been talking about. So we'll see with Blake Bell. But I mean, when you got Noah Gray doing what he did last night, I mean, who really needs a Blake Bell? I mean, you can just do that with the acting of Mahomes. It's all good. Andy Reid continued and says that it's hard to put some of the things Patrick Mahomes does into historical context.
I talked to guys, but just like I mentioned last night, just don't take it for granted. I mean, that's not, these things are, they're special. Some of these things we're seeing from him. And so appreciate him, but it's unique. So enjoy every one of them, but it's not something that a lot of people have the advantage, that advantage of being a part of. So with that, I mean, that throw was incredible. The throw to Kelce is the one that might get looked over a little bit down the middle of the field. I mean, that throw and that catch were ridiculous. And there were a couple other ones in there that were really good. I mean, the one naked play where he kind of hung on to it on third down and threw it up to Juju. I mean, that was another good one. So listen, I mean, he had a very good game, and I know the stats show that, and some of the things he's done historically have made history and will continue to do that. But the best thing about him is he's always trying to get better. And that's what I appreciate the most, Pete. I mean, he's not sitting there, patting his, self on the back. He keeps moving forward and wanting to get even better.
Hey, Andy, you've mixed up your running backs in games and from week to week in a way that I can't remember you really doing since you've been here, except maybe when you've absolutely had to because of injuries. So I'm just wondering, what are you using from week to week and within games to kind of pick and choose who the right guy is for what situation?
You know, we're getting to know number 10. I mean, he's growing right before our eyes. So we've spotted him in periodically just to give him some experience and to see how he handled it. But we know Clyde can, you know, is good. One can play. I mean, these guys are, they're all good. They're all talented. And so we're trying to, Greg does a good job of trying to work them in certain spots, but it's a more of a learning experience with 10, and the more you see, the more you utilize him and Clyde on the first downs and, you know, one on the third downs. I mean, he does such a good job there. So, I mean, that's kind of where we were last night. I think that was pretty obvious.
Yeah. Okay. And you mentioned Pacheco. What have you learned? You're saying you get to know him, getting to know him. What have you learned about him, say, since the regular season started?
Yeah. So we in camp, you know, we saw, just like you did, we saw hard runner. He was a hard runner. He didn't necessarily have the feel for the play. He was going to just run. Every week he's gotten a little bit better at understanding the play and then running hard, setting up, then running hard and finishing it. And then learning the pass game, and then most of all, learn the protections on top of all that. He's gotten better at all those things. And I would anticipate every week, you know, he'll do even better. You saw he had a nice blitz pickup during the game, and, you know, so that's progress. That's a good thing.
Yeah, it feels like learning on both ends, learning Pacheco, what kind of player he is for the Chiefs standpoint, and Pacheco learning about the scheme, what he's looking for, the way he's supposed to react to certain blocks, setting them up, being patient, and then, you know, the explosion after that. Andy Reid saying just that feel that, you know, at times he was just running, and now a better feel. Has to improve and continue to get with the pass plays and certainly the protection. But it kind of feels like it's, as the weeks go along, he's going to be integrated more and more. If he gets a better feel for it and they get a better feel of how to use him, that this is going to be a true committee this season progresses, that it may not be, you know, 70-30 Clyde Edwards-Helaire to Pacheco / McKinnon. It could be closer to 50-50 with those guys if Pacheco continues to improve. So, you know, and it's exciting if this is just the beginning of what he's looking like and just the beginning of learning and getting the feel for the offensive line, then, yeah, what can he do as he continues to improve? So that's certainly encouraging from what the Chiefs are seeing from number 10 and mixing in those different running backs and the running backs by committee. And Andy Reid has done that in the past. Like, he's had guys that are, you know, group running backs. In the playoffs, that's not what we've seen. In the playoffs, he sticks with one guy.
Well,
here's the running back.
And part of all of that, I think, is just who you trust and who you trust scaling for the moment. And that might be, I don't know if it's the biggest thing, but it's something that I think we at least need to make sure is noted around Pacheco, where clearly they trust Clyde Edwards-Helaire, even as he's, you know, had some moments. That drop we mentioned earlier last night was a huge one. You just can't have that. But it's trust in pass protection, where they do trust Jerick McKinnon. It's trust in early down situations where you have a little wiggle room, but you don't want to be put behind the sticks. I think Pacheco, I kind of went through and scrolled through earlier. I think maybe the majority of his carries came on first down, and I'm waiting for the snap charts to come out that have like the down and distance and all of that, because I want to know more situationally how Pacheco was used. But they're working him in a way that is not only in the end of a blowout at this point, right? Like, they are trying to really work him into the flow of the offense, and early on, no less. So that to me is just a great barometer of how the Chiefs have learned to trust Pacheco, and as Andy Reid says there, Pacheco is now getting more and more comfortable on the field with them. I just think that's a tremendous sign.
And he's different. It's not of running backs that are the same. Like, he's a different pace and a different style. He's got some power, but he's going to be quicker to the hole as well than Clyde Edwards-Helaire is. So, you know, when you're the Titans, you've got a great running back like Derrick Henry, but it's that one note. It's Derrick Henry, Derrick Henry, Derrick Henry, Derrick Henry. Now, having Derrick Henry certainly has its advantages. The Chiefs do not have that. So they have Clyde Edwards-Helaire, they have Pacheco, at least though, and McKinnon, and they have guys that are different in the fact that, you know, if you know, Pacheco doesn't run like Edwards-Helaire, Edwards-Helaire doesn't run like Pacheco. So that's good if you're going to be working different guys in from that standpoint. Andy Reid was asked how, generally speaking, the league's concussion protocols are working.
You know, I'm not claiming to be a doctor at all. So, but I know the league and the doctors have spent so much time on this trying to figure it out and make it right. And so I think it's an ongoing deal, and we keep learning and learning. And that's the most important thing, that we don't just put walls up to say this is the way it's going to be, but that they're willing to work with it. And they're doing that. We're finding things out as we go. And likewise, the players are. It's open communication. Well, I'm not sure it's always, I don't know this for a fact, but I'm not sure it's always been that way. But it's open communication and amongst the parties there. So if that can, you know, if we keep that up, we'll kind of figure this thing out here as we go.
The way Legarius has played and just his maturation being that prominent nickel cornerback, what has given, I guess, you guys the confidence to maybe give him more of the ability to blitz, and also just what you've seen from him in cover so far?
Yeah, boy, he's a good cover guy. He's always right there and tight on it. And we give him, you know, he's got a big responsibility. And that's not an easy position to play, where you have all these options that you've got to work out with the other safeties and with you know, the linebackers. So it's not always just man to man coverage, and he handles all that very well. You know, at the same time, he goes out and he's equally as good out at the corner spot. So that's also a plus. And he does it every day. I mean, he goes out and he works at this thing every day. He's also tough. You've got to have a little bit of linebacker in you, a little bit of safety, a little bit of corner when you get into that nickel spot. And he's got that, and he has the feel for space, and he also can cover your man.
It's been impressive what he's been able to do. And last night was a really impressive game for Snead. You know, the sack that happened, the strip fumble, but he had a number of other plays, whether it's tackles. And then, of course, after the touchdown to Mike Evans, where I thought Watson was in good position, but Mike Evans is Mike Evans, and Brady put it in a great spot as well. Then the next time down there, they went one-on-one with Snead and Evans, and I think it was Chris Collinsworth that said Steve Spagnuolo was almost daring the Bucs to go and throw it to Mike Evans again, and they did, and Snead was on him this time, and Snead played it perfectly. And that is not easy to do for someone that, as Andy Reid was talking about, does so many different things. If Snead was just a guy that said, okay, you're going to play right cornerback and you're going to play outside and that's what you do, and those are the things he works on every single day, and going up against guys one-on-one in the end zone and fade routes and bigger receivers like Mike Evans, then you go, yeah, he did his job. And is it impressive? Is it not impressive? Yeah, against Mike Evans is going to be impressive. But it adds to it when the Chiefs can go, we're going to put Legarius Snead in the slot. Okay, we're going to put him back, and he's going to be playing more of a safety. He's going to blitz on this one. Okay, he's going to slide over and cover this guy. Oh, by the way, one-on-one at the one-yard line, we'll put him on Mike Evans, and we'll dare the Bucs to throw to him. Like, it's just so versatile and such a great player that, you know, you could argue he's the team's defensive MVP through the first four games of the season.
He's a special player for all of the things that he can do, the versatility, the diversity of his skill set, and the different ways that he's used is just both a testament to how Steve Spagnuolo has identified him either once he got in the building or pre-draft. I don't know how far he was involved, but the coaching staff's implementation of his skill set and the scouting crew getting him in the building, one of the shining jewels in the crown of that entire operation over these last few years.
Andy Reid continued talking about the offensive line, saying that they really responded to the challenge against the Bucs.
Yeah, so I don't think it's a secret, but we didn't do as well as we wanted to there against the Colts. I mean, it just wasn't the way that I wanted it. I didn't handle it with the play calling the way I wanted it done. And EB and I went through and talked about it, and everybody needed to raise their game, the both of us and the rest of the guys. And so, you know, the challenge was out there for all of us to step up, but it always starts up front. It always starts with the big guys. And so, they, you know, they inevitably, they want, they don't say much, but they want that responsibility. And we need to pick our game up. And so, they did a nice job last night. There's plenty of room for improvement. But last night they did a nice job. They came out, with a purpose and a certain intensity level, and their assignments were pretty sound there.
Yeah, and a little bit on the lighter side, Coach. Don't see you in many commercials, but you're getting a lot of big reviews for that State Farm spot. What kind of led to that? What led the decision to do that?
Well, listen, Pat asked me if I would do it with him, and I told him I'm not very good at that stuff, as you guys know, doing these things. But you know, listen, it was a fun thing. It was good to see how people treat Pat. It was interesting for me to see how that production goes. He does a lot of these things, and it kind of gave me the inside scoop on it, literally, to be able to see what he has to go through to put all these together. And it's quite interesting. Great people involved there. I mean, they obviously reached out and talked to me about it, and knowing that I wasn't real comfortable doing those kind of things, but they made it as comfortable as possible.
Yeah. So don't fall asleep near Andy Reid. Is that what we learned also from the week? Oh, I hope that wasn't somebody's learned funniest best from the weekend coming up in the next hour. If it was, my apologies to either you or Beards, Josh, but I thought it was a really good commercial. I thought it was pretty funny. I was surprised to see Andy Reid in it when it first showed him. I'm like, oh, is that an impersonator? Is that going to be like a fake? Oh, wait, it's actually Andy Reid. And then it's Patrick Mahomes. And then pretty good. I enjoyed it. That was nicely done.
I had no opinions on it, and will continue having no opinions on it until about 1:30 today.
Okay, so I learned that Josh will hold his opinions until we find out things that he learned, things that were the funniest for him, or things that may or may not have been the best from the weekend for him.
This is the cliffhanger. Did I just learn that Andy Reid had a commercial? Did I think it was funny? Or was it the best thing I saw all weekend? And that's something I'm not going to reveal until LFB.
Well, it was going to be my funniest, but I guess I'm going to have to change it to the Mizzou game now.
I mean, here's the thing. Like, didn't seem necessary, right? That didn't feel warranted with what we're talking about. It's like just walking down the hall and somebody just punching you for no reason. Like, oh, hey, man. Oh, well, F me. All right, cool. I'm just going to go stand over in the corner.
Totally unnecessary act of violence, like Georgia in the fourth quarter.
Like, what? Cool. Cool. Well, I hope
sort of a disappointing end to an hour that really started off pretty well. Kind of reminds me of some football I saw this weekend.
Beards, I hope you enjoy rooting for Lance Leipold in Wisconsin. We'll take a timeout. We'll wrap up this hour next.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
This is this guy has a rough luck with the mouth.
Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, one more hour to go, wrapping up this hour, hanging out at Blue Hills Country Club for the Kids Foundation, for the Kids, KC.org, F-O-R-E, the Kids, KC.org. You can go there, check out, see how you can donate, give back all of the money, the proceeds over, you know, $5 million, I think, something like that. Millions of dollars have been raised to give to Children's Mercy over the years, whether it be to buy a new ambulance or different things for the children that are there. And now all of the proceeds are going to the Children's Mercy Anxiety and Depression Clinic that is going on there.
So, close in on $6 million on the website. Woo. $5.75 million. Let's keep that ticker churning.
Yeah. I mean, I thought the five stood out, but yeah, almost $6 million. $1 million, and they will raise $1 million today with this golf tournament. The dinner coming up tonight, which you can buy tickets to as well. So we'll continue more Zone right after this from Blue Hills Country Club.